This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Deadly and destructive wildfires continue to spread throughout the southeastern United States. The latest numbers from the National Interagency Fire Center indicate that about 1.5 million acres of land burned throughout the region just this year. A new report from REVEAL, which is a special project of the Center for Investigative Reporting, documents that not only are wildfires getting bigger and more expansive, but they are increasingly happening in areas close to human habitation. And this has significant ground-level consequences for fire departments and communities who aren't accustomed to fighting wildfires. REVEAL reporter Eric Segarra has reported on dozens of wildfires and contributed to a new report on the topic and joins me now to talk about the latest. Eric, welcome.
Well, thank you for having me.
Wildfires used to be something that was, I think, concentrated in the western half of the United States, but they do seem to be happening here more often. Tell us what's going on and how things are different.
Well, actually, wildfires, while concentrated in the western United States, it's typically because we pay attention to that more. They're larger there. Wildfires actually occur quite frequently throughout the country, but it's kind of confluence of three factors. You have more than a century of land management practices that have kind of suppressed fire on the wild in the wilds. That includes stuff like timber management policies, where we've encouraged the growth of forests so then we can then harvest them for natural resources. Also, livestock grazing. Overgrazing seriously stopped fires in the early 1900s. And then a policy that we tried to put out as many wildfires as quickly as possible. So what that has done is led to kind of decades of overgrown vegetation throughout the United States. And then on top of that, you have urban sprawl. We keep pushing out. We keep building in these areas where the vegetation is overgrown, homes, shops, stores, commercial buildings, that sort of thing. And then the final thing is climate change. Temperatures are getting warmer, but also severe weather events are more common. Dry periods are drier. Wet periods are wetter. This all kind of contributes to a kind of perfect storm scenario for wildfires.
Well, let's take these one at a time. Let's go back to these wildlife and wilderness management practices, which I think have changed a little bit recently, but not quickly enough. So take us back maybe to the turn of the 20th century when these practices and these management practices first went into effect.
I think what we found in the early 1900s, particularly right around when the Forest Service was just starting to be formed, we saw a series of pretty nasty, vicious wildfires. And the reaction to that was we need to kind of be very aggressive with how we fight these fires and suppress them or put them out as quickly as possible. And that persisted for many, many years. In the past few decades, have been backing off from that policy. And now they're, if they can do so, they will let the fire burn to kind of clear out the vegetation. But that all depends upon what's at risk in the area, whether or not there are homes, critical habitats for endangered species or things like that.
And a lot of this was done initially to protect the timber industry, not so much to protect the wilderness, which seemed to be doing pretty well on its own one way or another. But this industry where you got into part of this was monoculture, the kind of trees you grew, and then the ecology around that and the sort of brush and underbrush that it would encourage. And then, as you say, putting these things out as quickly as possible. To what extent did kind of protecting the timber industry also play a part in this?
You know, I actually have not researched that, so I really can't speak to that.
So then we've got the other problem that we talked about, which is encroachment. We're actually living closer to these areas than we used to be, where you have residential areas butting up against wildernesses, wilderness areas. WUI, with the unfortunate name of WUI, but there we are. Tell us about these.
So this is the wildland-urban interface. It's basically where homes and other buildings kind of border or mix in with the forest or wild areas. You know, it can be the desert as well. And what we found is that about a third of the country lives in these areas, and it's growing every day, every year. In North Carolina from 2000 to 2010, about half of the new homes built were built in these zones.
And to what extent, I mean, that obviously poses a hazard to the people who live there, so that makes the stakes and the consequences of wildfires greater. Does it also create more destructive fires? Is there some way in which this kind of interface is actually making things more dangerous or fires more robust?
Well, It's actually doing two things. Obviously, you're putting buildings and people at risk when they're in these areas. But the interesting thing is we're actually increasing the chances of having wildfires. 95% of the wildfires in the U.S. are caused by humans. And so there have been studies showing that in the wildland-urban interface, the actual presence of humans is actually causing more and more fires as well.
And that compounded by the fact that if you make a kind of residential subdivision on the edge of a wilderness, the fire department that you choose and their training might be to protect homes and not necessarily deal with wildfires. Tell us about that.
Right. So there is kind of a difference in philosophy, a fundamental difference in how you fight a building fire or home fire versus how you fight a wildfire. A building fire, a home fire, you're all about protecting property, saving lives, and trying to minimize damage. With wildfires, it's more about managing the land. You actually fight a wildfire by containing it, drawing containment lines, letting it burn out, depriving it of fuel. And that's kind of contrary to what you do with structure fires or building fires. And when those two mix, when a wildfire starts to threaten homes, that's when it gets expensive and it gets really dangerous for both firefighters and homeowners and the general public in that area.
And when wildfires happen in urban areas, it poses some other challenges. Like, for instance, I guess insurance companies are not covering certain homes. Is that true?
There are some cases where insurance companies are no longer insuring in these areas. Other cases, rates are really climbing for homeowners. So it can be expensive if you can even get the insurance.
What role is the U.S. Forest Service changing? As you say, some management policies now are beginning to change as we begin to understand what the old policies and management practices had done. What role is the Forest Service playing now in maybe reversing some of this?
So the Forest Service is basically trying to go through and clean up its land. They own about 192 million acres throughout the United States, and about 100 million of that is areas that they need to clean up and thin and treat. The problem is, however, they also have to fight wildfires, and their budget for fighting wildfires actually comes out of the entire pot that they have to pull from. So every year you hear them say, you know, they spent X number of dollars. This year I think they're up to $1.6 billion so far this year. That comes out of their budget. That takes away from the money that they could be using for preventative treatments, thinning the land, the forest, removing vegetation, that sort of thing.
We are talking about wildfires today on The State of Things. Eric Segarra is my guest, senior data reporter at Reveal for the Center for Documentary Studies. I think I got that wrong. It's actually the but anyway, Reveal is an investigative project, and you have been looking into some of this. What about working together now? We talked about the problem that, let's say, a residential fire department might have if it suddenly finds itself dealing with a wildfire. Are they working with the Forest Service? Is there any kind of joint program to say, oh, no, we need to change the training on this?
So the way it works right now, what we found is that about 20% of the of the fire departments in North Carolina alone that are responsible for responding for wildfires, only 20% have the training. The rest have to rely on partnerships with neighboring agencies or the state. And the federal government will come in and assist. I believe you're seeing that in Tennessee right now where the federal government, it's actually a federal fire that they're fighting, but they're pulling from the region. And I'm sure you have firefighters from North Carolina that are traveling to Tennessee to help there as well.
And climate change, too. That was the third prong in all of this. And that tell us about the impact climate change is having on this.
So what we're seeing is temperatures are climbing, and I've seen figures saying that not only is that contributing to more longer fire seasons and more frequent fire starts, but it's also increasing fire intensity. Burn patterns are changing. The fires are burning more ferociously and spreading more rapidly. We've seen that recently in the South. We also see it out here in the West quite a bit as well. The other thing that's happening is that we're getting more our wet periods are wetter and our dry periods are drier. What this means is that, like, we will have a lot of vegetation grow really quickly during the wet periods, but then the dry periods come and it dries that out. And then the last thing that climate change is kind of contributing to this is more dry thunderstorms, and that brings lightning. That 95% of human fires are caused by humans, well, the other 5% is typically caused by lightning.
So what about some potential solutions moving forward? What are some ideas?
I think mostly what people are talking about now is getting communities to work together with not only their residents, but also, you know, the federal, state, and neighboring organization or governments as well. But really looking at, okay, are our homes protected? And by protected, I mean, do they have space cleared out around their homes? They don't have vegetation growing right up alongside their homes. Their homes are built properly. They don't have they're using fire-resistant materials. They don't have wooden roofs, for example. Are they keeping their winds, rain gutters clean? Are they keeping leaves and pine needles off the rooftops? That sort of thing. And then when it comes to planning new developments, are we getting you know, where are we putting these new developments? Are we giving enough access to firefighters so firefighters can get in and out of these communities? Is there adequate fire hydrants and water supplies in the area, that sort of thing? And then lastly, there has been a lot of work in partnering with federal government, especially near like Forest Service land or National Park Service land, to kind of clear areas that would kind of prevent fire from moving into communities.
Eric, thank you so much for the update. Good talking with you.
Thank you.
Eric Segarra, senior data reporter for Reveal, a special project of the Center for Investigative Reporting. And you can find links to Eric's work at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a new film looks at the real town behind the fictional city of Mayberry. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.